It's time for another episode of The Scoop. Get ready to talk Temple Athletics with John DiCarlo, Kyle Gauss, Matt Vender, and Dalton Bolfazer.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to The Scoop.
What?
Season 2, episode 23. I'm going with a lounge act feel this week. Trying something a little different.
Bob Ross over here.
No, Bob Ross is dead, isn't he?
Yeah, he's been dead for like 20 years, hasn't
yeah.
he?
I could grow up my hair like Bob Ross. Uh-huh. I could just paint a happy little tree here. Matt, do you remember who Bob Ross is?
I do not know.
No, that's not surprising.
Big brown, this white guy with a big brown fro, and he would just do like painting by numbers on PBS.
Yeah, PBS, and he would paint paint like some sort of scene that would involve like a farm or something, and then he would, in my estimation, he would kind of like screw it up, and then you'd be like, no, Bob, what are you doing? Like, we're going to put a big ski lodge right here. Like, no. But then he would make it pretty again. He'd be like, oh, I see what he's doing. All right. And then an hour would go by. I'd be like, I just watched this guy on PBS for an hour. Just paint something. Maybe I'm inspired by it. If you guys could see Matt Vender dressed in a sharp navy blue blazer with gold buttons, button-down shirt, looking very
Chris
sharp.
Chris Wiesehand shoes.
Yeah.
Was it Andrew Thacker? Who had those shoes?
I think Wiesehand had them, and I think Taylor Johnson had them.
He looks sharp. Shoes. So maybe that's why I'm using the lounge. Yeah. Voice, I don't know.
Maybe you're in that type of mood.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe we are. It's a smooth week of The Scoop. Yeah. Very relaxed.
Season 2, episode 23.
Episode 23. We've got some basketball to talk about, mostly football. Temple, as we're recording this now, is set to play UCF on Wednesday night. And coming off a difficult loss to UConn, talking more football, spring football coming up next month. I have a clip from an interview with Rocco Armstead. We go week by week, position by position. We'll talk about the running backs this week. And, of course, we have several mailbag questions, some entertaining ones, so we're looking forward to getting to that. So let's kick it off with some – what do we want to do, football first?
Basketball.
Basketball first. Well, I'm already off to a great start. So.
Dalton, we miss you every week.
Yeah. Dalton Bolfazer producing this back in his Dalton Bolfazer studios here in North Philadelphia. We miss him.
He was the glue that held us together.
Yeah. What am I? If he was the glue, what am I?
You're the horse that gets turned into the glue.
Wow! That was pretty good.
First, I was going to say, like, we're like horses, like, without, like, dogs, we're just, like, running wild. And yeah. I realized I didn't use that metaphor, so I had to change it to something with
Could people. I at least be the horse in one of the, like, one of the Clydesdales in the Budweiser commercial for Christmas?
They don't get turned into glue. They spend the rest
You don't of know life. That.
If a Clydesdale breaks its ankle, that thing probably has better doctors than I have. It's out there, it's been, like, it's in, like, the Smarty Jones in the pool, just, like, rehabbing everything.
At Kennett Square, right? That's where they are? There's, like, a big equine, like, vet farm in Kennett Square, right?
And then where Smarty Jones died.
I think so, maybe.
Yeah, I believe. Because they tried rehab.
Yeah. Either way, I just want to be in that Budweiser commercial.
I'm saying you wouldn't be turning the glue.
You're more of like the... You don't know that. Oh, this is going to be highly insulting. Highly insulting.
Not to you. This, you're more of like a Tuesday. It's in Delaware. People are putting like $17 on you to win. And like, there's 12 people in the stands.
People who should be working but aren't because they're just racking up gambling debt.
Tumble, break an ankle.
What would my horse name be?
That's an interesting question to put me on the spot with. Your horse name has to be something. Give it, let's come back to me. Oh, your horse names.
Like Delaware racetrack down there.
Yeah.
Near White Clay Creek Country Club. Not a sponsor of The Scoop.
Could be.
It's
untapped potential.
Yeah. Huge Delaware listenership. All right. So let's get into the basketball team. They had a 10-point lead with, 8 minutes and 30 seconds left. Proceed to blow that lead, and, at the end of the day, it's the best player on the floor making the play, Jalen Adams, getting forced to his left, still scores on a layup with his right hand. And, again, I think this is a program that's kind of caught between a kind of a mediocre product on the floor in the present and people looking forward to the future with this recruiting class coming in. But thoughts on that game, about what we expected?
Those are the games where you really miss Josh Brown, right?
Yeah.
Like, outside of even, like, his ability to... He had, what, 2 or 3 buzzer beaters last year.
Mm-hmm.
Even outside of that, I mean, she's also had a decent... It was also at the end, right? We had the 2 seconds left.
Yeah.
He had a decent look at the shot. It didn't come in. Even outside of that, just the ability to kind of regroup a team. Say,
right.
Okay, we just need to stop here.
Yeah.
Alston, who has been playing pretty well, has a bad turnover at the end. People are going to put a lot of negativity towards Daniel Dingle, even though he was the best player on the floor for 40 minutes of the game, because he misses the front end of that 1-on-1. They go down, they score. That's really where you miss Josh Brown. Josh Brown's never going to be the type of guy to drop 25 and 7 every week, but like he's the type of guy that can really settle down that team and kind of grind out a win against Tulsa, a win against UConn. If they had two or three more, if they had beaten Tulsa, beaten UConn right now, and they were sitting at 16-12 going in at this point, and you still had three winnable games left, they'd be in better shape. They still wouldn't be a tournament team, but they'd be in better shape. Mm-hmm. But that's where it's helpful to get Josh Brown back next year.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing I think you saw the negatives. You saw the fact that they weren't able to close out the game against UConn. But, I mean, Damian Moore mm-hmm. played his best game of the season. Continued to start and, you know, scored 11 points on 5-of-5 shooting and looked really, really good and comfortable offensively against Amita Brima, who causes a lot of problems for a lot of
people. Yeah, they were fortunate that Brima only played, what, 16 minutes?
Yeah, he picked up, what, the 2 fouls in the first half. Yeah. Yeah, they won that game without Amita Brima doing much. He never is, like, a big scorer, but usually I feel like in games in the past against Temple, he's at least, well, against a lot of teams, he's blocking like 3, 4, 5 shots, rebounding more, affecting the game more. But yeah.
Yeah, the fact that he was a non-factor was a surprise. But yeah, Damian Moore looked good, and Alani Moore bounced back. You saw Alani Moore get going a little bit. Mm-hmm. He hasn't really played that well ever since Quentin Rose slid into the starting lineup, and he went to the bench. But that was a good outing for Alani Moore as well.
Yeah, that was Alani Moore's best game in 2 months. Like, he's kind of been a little stagnant ever since he started playing, getting the conference play.
Yeah.
But, and then Damian Moore doesn't play most of the second half after. He played 20 minutes total down the stretch. They didn't play him at all. Fran Dunphy said afterwards that he wanted to just have more veteran guys in there. I mean, Ernest Flatby is not exactly a veteran, but.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. It was kind of some curious decisions. I mean, I guess end of the day, he goes, okay, so they showed resilience. They haven't given up in the season. They almost got a win that would have helped a lot. At the end of the day, they lost. You can tell afterwards that this loss might have stung a little bit more for guys like Dan Dingell out there. Mm-hmm. Damian Moore didn't really show much emotion in the press conference, mostly because I think he's kind of just a little on edge about being in a press conference because he's a young kid. But yeah, Dingell kind of stressed, like, hey, there, a sense of urgency needs to develop in his team. They only got 3 regular season games left, so unless they somehow went out and win the tournament.
Which Dan Dingell said he thinks they can win out.
They could, right? I mean, they beat Florida State. They beat West Virginia. They also shot 57% from threes in those games. Like,
That's the thing this year. I mean, like, when they're hitting their threes, they're happy, but they can't. They're not good enough to.
They had a lot. That's what's against UConn. They didn't rely on three. They only hit, what, 2, 3 threes the entire game? Or it might be a little more. It was in the second half they struggled.
Mm-hmm. Well, the team that beat Florida State and West Virginia had an Onyeka that was scoring 20 points.
That was talking his way into NBA conversation.
Yeah, and tearing it up. So, yeah. I mean, if he's not hitting shots, this team is not going to go very far.
And Dan didn't take the bait. You know, there was a reporter after the game on Sunday who asked him, like, is it just kind of tough to close out these games, kind of referencing the fact that they lost to Tulsa in similar fashion earlier this season, saying, is it kind of tough to close out these games because you have a younger team? And Dan very correctly and promptly said, we can't ask much more out of the younger guys.
Right.
We need to have a better sense of urgency. And, you know, I mean, he knows that he needed to hit the front end of the one-on-one, but you said it's hard to beat him. Yeah, hard to beat him up for that, but it's Obi. I mean, picks up the 2 fouls and just really has been, and I wrote about this and should get this right, since that St. Joe's game where he had, what, 29?
Yeah.
He has not surpassed the 20-point mark since then. I think he scored 16, what, twice since then. He's just been in a huge funk and just can't even really seem to get himself out of it. And maybe it's not in his nature to play with a mean streak or a tough streak, but, you know, Fran said after the game, he said, he's a jump shooter. I'd like to see him maybe even step out a couple more feet just to give himself some space.
Shoot over
him. To shoot over some people. So, I mean, look, well, we know they have a huge uphill climb. If Cincinnati or SMU win in this conference tournament, I think it's going to be UConn before Temple. But if they're going to do anything, even if they want to make an NIT run, Obi and Etchinonia has to find some sort of swagger or confidence again, and that's been this isn't the first time we've seen this. And I don't know, he's a really smart kid and a good, very skilled basketball player, but I don't know what it's going to take for him to, obviously good players go through lulls and stretches, but like you said, this isn't the first time we've seen this, so at some point he has to hit a little bit of a stride where he doesn't hit these peaks.
And this freshman year when he was killing off the bench, Fran, in a rare Fran move, says, okay, I'm gonna start
you, and then it was,
and then he did that for like 3 games, struggle, and Fran even said the press conference, for some reason mentally he's different when he starts.
Because you really need, I mean, I'm pretty much stating the obvious here, but you know what you have in him skill-wise, but I think they really need to know what they have in him moving forward into next year, because you've got a couple of wing guys coming in, Dre Perry and J.P. Moorman, who are going to push for time, And it would be great to know going into next year, okay, well, we know that Shiz can do this. We know that Lonnie can do this. We know what we can get out of Obi. What are we going to get out of Obi?
Sure.
You know, I would have thought that by now, or you would have hoped that by now, especially with what he showed in November, that he would really be hitting his stride right now. And he just seems like when there's a little bit of adversity there, and I'm probably putting words in his mouth, we didn't get a chance to talk to him on Sunday, but when a little bit of adversity strikes with foul trouble, shuts down, and it can't be like that.
Yeah, he's sorry, Matt, go ahead.
Have you seen in Fran Duffy's time here, have either of you guys, can you guys recall a player that's had this big of a slump after?
Scooty Randle dropped 31 against Kent State his senior year, and then was, after that, averaged like 7 points a game, and shot like 30% the rest of the year.
Yeah, Scooty was a little different in that Obi, really, that first whole month, he played really well. Mm-hmm. But Scooty had...
I think Scooty even had a couple okay games.
Yeah, like that Kent State game.
Yeah, but after that, his percentages were bad. He just went through like a strong...
And with all due respect to Scooty, I mean, I think Obi is more athletic. Yeah. He has more pure skill. You know, I mean, Scooty obviously accomplished a decent amount in his career at Temple and going to the tournament. He had tough luck and not being on that team that played San Diego State in the tournament because he got hurt, but... Yeah, I mean, that comes to mind. Yeah, certain players, again, have hit lulls or they've hit stretches like this, but this one's been, with Obi coming out of the gate and playing as well as he did, and then really just, I mean, he was hitting from everywhere against St. Joe's. He was hitting from the perimeter. He was driving in with authority. I mean, he really looked like, as cliche as it sounds, playing like a man possessed, and now it's just, you know, he's really kind of wilted a little bit and has to find his stride.
Yeah.
You know?
Scooty Randle, that's a rewind 4 years. Opener against Kent State, 31 points. Next week, 16 points, 12 rebounds. Game after that, 18 points, 8 rebounds. Over the next 19 games after that, he averaged 9 points, shot 32%, 26% from three. Just completely wheels fell off. Then he got together a little bit towards the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, he's... I miss you,
Andrew.
Yeah. I mean, again, at this point, it's, you know, they're not going to the tournament. They may not even go to the NIT, but,
CBI.
I mean, if there's...
CBI, I still think.
There's... I think it is.
There's
another
one. It's like CIT, and then there used to be a Las Vegas one. I don't think the Las Vegas one got canceled.
I don't know. If Temple got a CIT or CBI invitation, do you think
I think they do CBI.
They wouldn't turn it down?
Yeah.
What are three tournaments we have no interest in covering?
Well, I mean, they wouldn't be. I think those are, at least the Las Vegas ones, obviously in Las Vegas. But, like, you don't host a CBI. Do you host a CBI game?
I think
so. Somebody has to. Like, it's not CBI arena out there. In
Atlantic City High School.
I'll go back to Boardwalk Hall.
Yeah. Atlantic City High School has a decent gym.
Yeah, Atlantic City High School.
Nicer than LaSalle, nicer than Gold Arena. Like, literally nicer than, I mean, maybe I'm not.
You hear that LaSalle has a thing now with Uber? You can pay $1.99 to the flat rate to go from LaSalle to Broad and Olney to get on the subway station.
Really?
It's 0.3 mile walk and $2. People are going
to
do that.
What do you guys need to see out of this team down the stretch? Might sound like a boring question because they're not really headed for anything exciting in March, but what do you need to see from them, anything that they can build on for next
year? You need to see OB show something that, like you said before, it'd be a lot easier if you can kind of at the end of this year go, okay, next year OB will give you 17 points a game. Like, it's easy to kind of like forecast that.
Mm-hmm.
So that he can show something resembling a resurgence, that would help. I think you need to see continued development and success from the other four guys you're going to rely heavily on a lot. Mm-hmm. Chazal, Quinn Rose, Alani Moore, and Damian Moore. And then other than that, I think I'm usually higher on Daniel Dingle than a lot of people are. So, I mean, the sappier part of me would say you want Daniel Dingle to continue playing like he is. That way he kind of continue to show that. It doesn't help for next year, but mm-hmm. it'd be a nice note to end on.
Yeah.
And at this point in the season, I just wonder if Dunphy could potentially see what he has in Carvalho or even mm-hmm. Isaiah Lewis. I mean, maybe not Isaiah Lewis, but at this point, like, do you think? I just wonder if there's any chance that he tries to work those guys in just
I guess
to see what he has.
The counterpoint to me would be Fran Duffy knows what he has in those guys, right? Like, he sees them all the time in practice.
Yeah.
Like, I'm reflective of this sometimes. Like, I would ask him at least a couple of times in press conferences, like, what do you – did you think of going to Devontae Watson there? What are you seeing out of Devontae? And then you would see what he had in Devontae. I'm like, this is what he's seeing in
practice.
All
that being said, what guy comes to your mind in the Fran Duffy era of never showed anything in practice, they gave him a shot and ran with it a little bit? I think Stretch 4.
Craig Williams. Yeah.
Craig Williams didn't do anything in practice. All of a sudden, just out of necessity, goes in there and hit, what, four or five threes in his first game. And he transferred 2 years later and became a 9 point a game guy
TCU,
for TCU.
Right?
But TCU, before they were in the Big 12, they were in the Mountain West.
Craig Williams is such a part of a bizarre, interesting
Boo-boo
part
Williams?
Of Temple basketball history, because he came in with Dunphy's first class. He had come to a Temple basketball camp years ago with his mother, and Chaney kind of recommended him and said, hey, give this kid a shot, and to honor Johnny, said, all right, I'll take a 6'9 kid that can maybe shoot a little bit. And I mean, my guess would be that he's just
He broke his fifth metatarsal.
Yeah. And then it's never quite the same after that. So.
Well, that doesn't bode well. Isn't that what Ben Simmons broke?
I have no idea. I'm not a doctor.
No, Ben Simmons has a different foot fraction. But anyway.
Yeah, and I would guess that Carvalho and
Ben Simmons
and
has a fracture in fifth metatarsal.
Really?
So hopefully it's not the same.
Isn't he in a scan today? Tomorrow?
I think it's tomorrow.
Yeah,
we turn this into a Sixers podcast.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah.
Right to Ricky Sanchez.
A lot to talk about.
We got
with us, Keith Pompey.
1.5 hours left.
Yeah.
Until the deadline.
Frank Monjo, we could have him on. He'll be all pissed.
Quick,
so we asked him about
my favorite
the
part of all trade deadlines, no matter what sport, is the clock will strike 3 o'clock. People will lose their mind. Oh, nothing happened. This didn't happen. And then the league just won't announce the trade to 3:15. Like, oh yeah, the paperwork got at 2:59. Just had to go through the final approval.
Was that Isaiah Thomas? Did you see that the whole thing where all he did was put out the eyes emojis and everybody melted
Jimmy
down?
Butler.
Yeah.
Take
what if we broke a rare piece of Sixers news, first reported by AlScoop.com?
Pepe Sanchez coming back.
Yeah. Hey.
Max contract.
Glue guy, effort guy. Yeah. Anyway, let's talk
position breakdown, Temple football.
Temple football. So this week, we're talking about the running backs. Interesting position to break down. Jahad Thomas on his way out, potentially an NFL draft pick.
Yeah, I think he's drafted. Might be the last day guy, obviously. At the very least, he gets in some
going off his combine evaluation, pre-combine evaluation.
Well, then in combine, because he'll be in the combine. And then worst case scenario, he'll be one of those guys that draft ends, and then there's always a wave of guys that already have an offer. They'll sign that night. He'll be part of that wave.
Yeah. So this is obviously, we're looking at that position, that group of running backs. Rockwell Armstead is your likely starter. Throw David Hood in the mix, Jagger Gardner in the mix. We've talked about the possibility, based on stuff we've heard, that maybe
Isaiah Wright
is maybe going to become more of a running back. I still think they probably split him out and do all sorts of stuff with him based on what Dave Patino wants to do. An interesting group of players behind Armstead. I mean, you know what you have in him. It's just the question of what's the next step for him? What's the next level of progression for him? Because he was really a dominant runner at times and scored a touchdown late in the conference championship win at Navy when he was really playing hurt.
Yeah.
And then
we're on
didn't,
the field that part.
Yeah. Didn't really nobody looked great in the bowl game, but really didn't look like he had much burst in the bowl game against Wake Forest, but still your clear number one running back. Mm-hmm. Let's maybe talk, and we'll hear from a clip from Armstead in a second that we'll play for you. I got a chance to talk to him about a number of different things, but let's talk about that group behind him of Isaiah Wright, David Hood, Jagger Gardner. Why am I drawing a blank?
Tyler Grainer.
I was drawing a blank on his name for a second. And it's interesting to look at this group because I wonder what that group will look like and what they'll be asked to do in this offense, if they'll be catching the ball in the backfield a little bit more and stuff like that. So let's talk about those guys. What do you see from that group?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think despite even the people that played, David Hood's played a lot. David Hood before Armstead and Jagger Gardner came in, they tried playing David Hood as a true freshman. They burned his redshirt at one point, and I think he ended up getting a medical. Did he even get a medical redshirt? Yeah, maybe. But anyway,
freshman year, yeah.
Yeah, they tried actually using him. He was a 17-year-old kid at the time. He wasn't even an 18-year-old. He's played a bit, but even with that, there's still question marks, right? Mm-hmm. Is David Hood running back at this level? Is Jagger Gardner? Jagger Gardner has always been the guy when people talk about, who's going to switch positions.
Should be talking about Nick Sharga, too.
Just about to bring that up. When we interviewed Dave Patton, he said, and then we always have the ability to give it to Sharga three or four times a game. It really seems like, even though he didn't utilize the fullback that much.
Gave me a very dirty look for...
Utilize the fullback that much at Coastal Carolina, which is funny, because A.J. Sattinger, the guy that originally committed to Temple, decommitted to Temple when Rule came in, ended up at Coastal Carolina to play fullback there. Doesn't really play that much because they don't really use a fullback that much. But he's cognizant of the fact they have a pretty good fullback in Nick Sharga. I'm kind of curious about Tyler Grainer. He's the type of guy that, if he was healthy, he obviously had a lot of talent. They were kind of lucky to get him in at the end. Is that type of running back that could be a nice change of pace running back? It's just, is it asking too much? He hasn't played a snap of college football. He hasn't been healthy. Another guy, complete dark horse, Johnny Forrest, who was a walk-on from New Rochelle, who had actual like D1 offers that most schools don't take a lot of running backs that he didn't jump on quick enough. Mm-hmm. So, who knows? Yeah, that'll be an interesting battle. In the end, I think Isaiah Wright's the guy that gets 7, 8, 10 carries a game.
Yeah, I would agree. I think Rapal Armstead would be your lead back, and then Isaiah Wright will probably be, you know, the do-it-all kind of back. He'll be split out at receiver. I think they'll need to play him a good amount at the slot like they did at the end of last season. Wright will be all over the place. But, yeah, I think they're going to need a pass-catching back, whether that's Isaiah Wright or I think we've seen David Hood has the ability to do that. And Tyler Brander does intrigue me as well. I mean, you know, assuming he's back to being healthy, you know, he dealt with a pretty serious ankle injury in high school and missed the end of his high school season, and that carried over into his college career. But, you know, he's a really dynamic playmaker when he's healthy and at full strength. So if they can get him, if he's back to being healthy, he'd certainly be a guy that, you know, we'll be keeping a close eye on in spring ball.
Yeah, and so, as I said before, I had a chance to talk to Rockwell Armstead recently, asked him about a number of different things, and there's a clip here of him talking about his new position coach, the fact that there's some continuity with his former position coach and Chris Weasihan, who's now going back to coaching the offensive line and what he's looking forward to there. So here's Rockwell Armstead talking about what he's looking forward to from the new coaching staff as they head to spring ball next month.
It's good to have both of them. You know, I love what Coach Weez brought to the table last year. You know, he helped me out a lot in my game and helped me improve. But I'm very excited for Coach Lucas. You know, we sat down, we had a long talk, and I actually got to know him on a personal level. And he's a really cool dude. And just the things that he brought at Delaware, you know, he had three backs that ran for over 600 yards last year. Yeah. You know, that's something I'm excited about, just to be able to have help. And, like, he knows I can do it. But, you know, just someone to push me and make me better, because, you know, nothing's given to you. So, you know, I still have to go out there, work, compete, and make sure I'm the starter by the next season, and, you know, keep that rolling.
All right. It's time for a mailbag. The sometimes silly, sometimes serious mailbag. Sometimes dark and foreboding mailbag.
Yeah, it's
sometimes
awesome.
Robust, sometimes thin.
So kind of in the middle. We got 7 or 8.
Yeah.
It's not bad.
You got your Pat Egan's of the world, your Bud Knapp's of the world from our friends at Al's 24/7, your James Rutfield's of the world. I like making people plurals. Your Kyle Gauss's, your Matt Vendor's.
Actually, I'm not the only Kyle Gauss. If you Google me, most of the time it's me. But if you get you deep enough down that Google rabbit hole, which I've been plenty of times, there was some teenager that unfortunately passed away in some car accident. And there was like an in memorial of Kyle Gauss. I'm like, holy shit. It's just like an out body. Wow. We're keeping it in. It's just like an out-of-body experience where I'm seeing my own death and seeing how the media recover it. No, it's just a kid that unfortunately passed away. Nowhere near me. Don't even know where he's from. That's the only other Kyle Gauss.
You Google yourself, or are there other Matt
Vendors
out there?
Highlander.
Yeah, there's like a Matt Vendor, I think, like who lives in New Zealand. And I have to, my Twitter profile is Matt_Vendor because Matt Vendor's already taken by this guy. There's another Matt Vendor, and he's from, forget where. He looks kind of like a redneck or something. And I don't like that we have the same name, because like if somebody looks me up,
it's him.
And if you look at his Twitter page, there's some, you know,
get some SEO going on. Get your name close to the top.
Yeah, I am not affiliated with that Twitter page. I just want to make that clear for the record.
So my email address, if anybody ever wants to shoot me anything, is kgauss@gmail.com. There's a lot of people, primarily this woman, Catherine Gauss in Minnesota. If you're listening, Catherine, I don't know if she doesn't know it's not her email address. Puts it in for everything. Every newsletter she signs up for, her friend wanted to send her an e-gift card to some, I don't know, serving bears or whatever in Minnesota restaurant. They sent it to my email address. Her friend had to email me, hey, turns out you're not Catherine. She gave me the wrong email address. Can you please forward this back to, like, blah, blah, blah.
And what was this about again? Bears?
It's like some restaurant. And I just assume that they serve bison and stuff, because it's up in Minnesota. Does not know her own email address.
You know,
I get crap from her all the time.
They probably have standard bar food up there, too. You know.
I've never been to Minnesota. I flew out of Minnesota.
You did?
I flew out of Wisconsin, a connecting flight in Minneapolis.
Yeah.
So I've technically been to Minnesota.
Beautiful layover. No, I've never been there. All right. Anyway, let's get to the mailbag. First question comes from @PhillyBully. Is Trey Clock out of the picture with other P5 schools in the mix now, NC State? Or is the staff still confident, and he has a little smiling teeth emoji?
I guess I would assume that he's going off that based upon the fact that, like, two guys from North Carolina State now follow Trey Clock. I mean, Matt, he's told you from the beginning that proximity to home's a factor, right?
Yeah, I mean, he said that was a major factor. Look, there's been a lot of schools that have been after him, whether it's North Carolina State. I think, you know, it sounds like Rutgers is in the mix. There's a lot of Power Five schools that want him. There's a lot.
They weren't competing against Colorado School of Mines. Like, they were going up against a Big Ten school.
Yeah,
from the beginning.
Real place?
Yeah, Colorado School of Mines.
Really?
I don't think they have. They might have. Who knows? But yeah, I mean. This is not a slight. NC State isn't like a.
Is that where? Is that where we were supposed to recruit that kid?
NC State isn't. It's not Alabama.
Should we tell listeners that you.
No, I'm telling them about Trey Clark. So yeah, I wouldn't.
Yeah, and I mean, look, a graduate transfer offensive lineman with 2 years of eligibility remaining is going to be a hot commodity. He's going to have a lot of suitors. A guy that, you know, has already started at the college level, he's going to have a lot of suitors. North Carolina State's one of them. But, yeah, I wouldn't say that that's, like, you know, a bad thing for Temple. He's had a lot of suitors, and Temple still remains in you know, heavy contention. For
I will be curious as to, say, for some reason he did want to go to NC State. Most of the time, for a regular transfer, you usually got to wait out a year, 2 years to transfer within the same conference. It's more of a, like, an issue. With graduate transfer, he can go to different places without sitting out. I'm curious as to whether or not there's an ACC bylaw or anything with that, transferring to another school within the ACC.
Well, I think, again, and I'd be lying if I said I did a scan of this, but this getting his MBA thing is important, right? And that's where academics could really play a role for Temple here. I don't know that what these other schools offer in terms of their MBA program or what Rutgers has, what Northwestern has, but that also could weigh in Temple's favor. Their executive online MBA program. I don't know if he's
doing it online.
No, because he'll be here. But I don't know. That could play into it.
Plays football.
Are we moving on to the next question? Are you looking up MBA programs right now?
I'm looking up MBA programs. The Jenkins School of MBA Programs. Facts and rankings. Jenkins MBA. NC State University is rated. It's not like it has its top five best value public university. That's just NC State in general. 52 among full-time MBAs. What's isn't Fox usually like 35? Am I making that up?
Possibly. I know they had the number one ranking for
the online
MBA program. While we're looking into that, let's get to Mr. Knapp's question. The Buddy Bear asking us, what is your favorite color and why?
He's going to hate the fact that you just call him the Buddy Bear.
I call him that all the time now. He loves it.
Yeah.
Our friends at House 24/7, glad Bud chimed in.
Our great supporters of ours.
Yeah. Favorite color and why? Kyle, you
My favorite color is going to annoy you.
What color would annoy me?
Gray. Gray is legitimately my favorite color.
It's not, why would
just
that
like,
annoy
okay,
me?
It's not very exciting, but you can wear like anything with it. It's going to become more and more of a part of people's lives as
wearing,
they get older.
Like, literally, I'm
wearing. You look like a fuzzball. You look like something I would pick out of like a lint trap. Like, there's just a lot of stagnant colors, I would say.
Gray. A lot of gray.
Black. That's like a charcoal gray.
Yeah.
That's like a gray. Like, it's...
Kyle just pointed
Kyle
to
John.
I have it, too. I said blonde hair, you can't see it as much. If I get in, my sideburns a lot.
Yeah. That's where it's going to come in.
Yeah.
Matt's like 30 years away from that.
No, Matt, didn't you tell me you had a gray hair the other day? Or were we talking about this?
I've had a couple of gray hairs. Yeah, they popped up.
Really?
It's all the stress.
Okay, all the Al Scoop stress is getting
Al Scoop stress is just eating me alive.
The tyranny of Kyle Gauss.
Well, my favorite color is blue. I don't know if I have a great explanation other than, I don't know, I just like the color.
It's a tie for me between, like, blue and black, so that's not really much more exciting than what you said. Like, I always wanted to have, like, my last two cars have been black. I just think it's, like, a sharper color.
I went from red to black with my car purchase.
Yeah, you did, yeah.
Yeah, I
did. Yeah, I like black for cars. I have a black car.
Yeah, there we go.
Temple, by the way, is tied for 41st, and NC State is 52nd. So, try clock.
There you have it. It's coming to Temple. Next question from JRU Sirius, Mr. James Rutfield. Always sends us some interesting questions. This is another one. Here's a list of names. Tell me what they would do in life if sports didn't exist. List of names. Jeff Collins, Al Golden, Steve Adazio, Khalif Wyatt, Juan Fernandez. Love this question so much.
Yeah, this is a good one. Second week in a row, James has just come up with some...
Yeah.
A really, really
Let's
good
start with
question.
Jeff Collins. What would Jeff Collins do? I'm going to say... And this is going to make him sound kind of swarmy. I'm not going to say used car salesman. I'll say, like, timeshare salesman. I think he's like very good on like hammering home like the points. Like, here are my five bullet points. I'm going to bam, bam, bam. I think he can sell a product.
Yeah, he could be a salesman. I could also see him doing, I mean, you know, if the Sopranos wanted to do like a little like series. Now that
you know, Alec Baldwin always does Trump. He could just go on Saturday Night Live and just play.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, he could definitely pull off.
It's like
Tony Soprano.
The Southern Tony Soprano. If Tony Soprano woke up in Georgia,
yeah, there you go. If Tony Soprano was from Atlanta, then that would be.
I could also see
Meadow
him
would be looking at like Georgia Tech, and
I don't know where this is coming from. I could see him in some sort of leadership role at an amusement park in the South somewhere, and like just running a lot of seminars on like audience engagement and crowd engagement. I don't
know
like where
16-year-olds that are like half high and just watching the
like
you ever see Adventureland with Kristen Stewart and the guy from Social Network, plays Mark Zuckerberg.
I did not.
It was decent.
I could see him in that role.
Ryan Reynolds did that too.
Al Golden,
I'm seeing he's working at like an H.H. Gregg. Al yeah. Golden's selling me
really?
Like, he's good at it. Al Golden's like the floor manager trying to like push like refrigerators and washing machines.
Really?
At like upsell prices. And I'm sure he's very good. He's going to be a high riser because he's very methodical. Hell of a process to make him the number one franchise.
What do you see for Al Golden?
Could he be a teacher of some sort, maybe?
I don't think he could. Al Golden, I think, is very results-driven. He's very type A, and I don't think you can really fit that teacher role with that, right?
Not like an elementary school teacher. Maybe like a...
Al Golden is an elementary school teacher. Like, oh, my God, that'd be a great skit.
I mean, that would be pretty funny.
2 acres and a ball. What's an acre?
Oh, I mean, if he were teaching, I mean, if he were coaching high school football.
Why are we getting emails at 4:30 in the morning, Mr. Golden?
Why do they have email address if they're...
He could be a gym teacher.
Because it's Al Golden's elementary school.
Couldn't you just see him being, like, a ruthless gym teacher?
That would be
like
great.
A
I love
gym
all
teacher
this.
That you just fear.
See, I see Golden as, like, a CEO in some, like, financial company in New York. First of all, he's got the
sure.
North Jersey blood. He would read books about CEOs. I see him, like, Al Golden needs access to a whiteboard and lots of his own quotes that he kind of, like, amalgamates from, like, other people. And, like, all right, bro. Like, and he's got to be in meetings where he's talking about stuff he's read. He's using the word bro a lot, and he's lots of meetings. But I do love him as an elementary school teacher. My God, that would be so great. That would be just tremendous.
In this scenario,
his elementary school kids would be very stressed out.
In this scenario, is he an elementary school teacher in the sense that he just got hired like Euclid Hills, or is he an elementary school teacher in the sense that he created his own elementary school?
Love, a little bit of both. Love where you're headed with this. Now, no one other than you and I or anybody who happens to be listening to this podcast who went to Euclid Hills, imagine Al Golden. So Kyle and I both went to an elementary school in Chester County that had the open pod concept.
Yeah.
Meaning there was a wall here, some mat. Imagine, like, here's the big fifth grade room. Wall here, but you can see what's going on in this classroom and this classroom. So anybody who's in, like, so it was like 5A, B, C, and D. So even if Al Golden is not your teacher, you're here in Al Golden. Would love to see what Al Golden could do at Euclid Hills.
The other three teachers in the pod are like,
just
like
give
stereotypical
up.
Like 26-year-olds. Hey, I love working with children. You hear Al Golden just like,
yeah,
like stack the binders. Like his
yeah, yeah. It's like calling out kids and other, this guy.
Reference addendum 7.
Yeah. This kid over here is not listening. I'm not in your class. You are now. I'd love that. Here's where I think we're going. I mean, every one of these is just gold. Steve Adazio,
I'm imagining as like a, and let me hash this out before you say anything, a camp director, but not in the sense of like, oh, we're going to do finger painting. Camp director where he's like, he has all these kids underneath him, but he has all these counselors underneath him, like the 16-year-olds he hires for summer, and they're all trying to do this. Hey, let's go kayaking, let's do this. And Steve Adazio's just having them run the obstacle course over and over again. There's like a rope course, like, we don't want to do this anymore, get back up there. And at the end of the day, he's the one that has to do like the financials and stuff, so he's the one that really holds them all together. But he wants them to go up that rock wall.
What do you see for Adazio?
I don't know if I can top that. That's pretty good.
All these like 16-year-old girls, like, please, I just really need a date. They just want to make s'mores. No.
I just want to make s'mores.
I could see him as a used car salesman too, pushing it and pushing you and pushing you to buy this car that doesn't have any Carfax and has probably been in multiple accidents.
Look, I know Corollas. Corollas are this, they're this,
they're this. You want to drive this? You want to drive this thing in San Francisco? It's going to go up the hill. It's going to go down the hill. It's a good car. Buy it, please buy it. I'm not letting you out of here until you buy it. I see him.
And then they go to sign the paperwork and he's gone to a different car dealership.
Here's what I see for Steve Addazio. I see him as a gym teacher somewhere in Connecticut, and in the summer when he's off, restaurant business. So he is very much a results-driven gym teacher. So you see some aspects of him that you see in camp counselor Steve Addazio or camp director. And then the summer, like some like local pizza, like Italian joint where he's using the phrase macaroni a lot, and he comes over and he checks on people's tables all the time, like he's the head chef. And he goes up and talks to people. Hey, how you doing? You like the meal? But he's constantly coming up behind people, scaring them, giving like the big, like, Dazio, do you ever get the bear paw? Yo, how you doing? Kyle, Johnny. And he would hit your shoulder and be like, I think he might have left a bruise.
Don't wince.
Imagine him doing that. And you have he's constantly knocking forks out of people's hands. Like, oh, it was good, but now I dropped my fork. And then he's just ordering someone else around. Get him some more macaroni. I can see that. Khalif Wyatt.
Khalif Wyatt is the one where I might need to hear your answers first. Khalif's kind of the wild card for me.
I had a couple of thoughts on this. See, I kind of see Khalif Wyatt and Juan Fernandez in the same profession. Okay. And I don't know if I'm being boring on this, because I see him in two different parts of the world. I could see Khalif Wyatt as an actor.
Really?
Well, yeah. That's the easy one. I mean, yeah. he was like very good at drawing fast.
Right, yeah.
yeah.
The Khalif flail.
I see him as an actor. Also, could see him as a stand-up comedian.
Yeah, Khalif's a very funny guy.
Yeah, very funny guy. Could see him, like, maybe he's, like, I could see him as a dual, like, actor, stand-up comedian.
Khalif's a couple Kevin of, like, Hart in this scenario?
He's a taller Kevin Hart. I see him in a buddy cop movie or two. Who's he in a buddy cop movie with? Who would he be good with?
Who's the straight man in the buddy cop to him? Or is it going to be, like, a straight man, like, where he's playing off of? Or is it more like the other guys where they're both ridiculous?
What about Jimmy McDonald and Khalif Wyatt in a buddy cop movie?
I was going to do Anthony Lee, and then Khalif Wyatt just gets more and more frustrated with him as the movie goes on.
See,
by the end, he's just like, it's not even funny anymore. He's just chewing into him.
Yeah. Dave Duke.
Dave Duke.
And Khalif Wyatt in a buddy cop movie.
Dave Duke and Khalif Wyatt, and appreciate the question.
See, like,
Fran Dunphy is the police chief.
Duke! I just run out of the office.
Couldn't you guys see, like, Khalif, like, being, like, the MC guy at, like, parties, like, bar mitzvahs, stuff like that.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I know, like, when I was growing up and going around to bar mitzvahs and stuff, like, I would just see, like, there were guys who would probably make good money, like, I don't know.
Playing the electric slide.
Yeah, like, I could see Khalif doing that and, like, you know, like, taking home, like, a divorced 45-year-old woman after the party.
I'm meeting women at bar mitzvahs. It's just a gold mine.
Yeah, I'll go with that. I think
bar mitzvahs
like
are amazing parties, are they not? I mean,
yeah,
my
they're
goodness.
Always fun.
My goodness.
Like a promoter, I think Khalif would be good at.
A bar mitzvah promoter. So we've got a lot of different possibilities for Khalif Wyatt.
Juan Fernandez, you thought was going to be the same thing as Khalif
I see
Wyatt?
Him as an actor in Argentina and Spain, like just being like the mysterious guy in like... bit roles.
I thought when I'm Juan Fernandez, I immediately thought like he's gonna be the guy. So he never makes it to the States, right? Because he never leaves because there's no sports.
He has no
in this
interest
scenario.
In going back
he's
now.
Just in Argentina in this scenario.
Yeah,
Juan Fernandez is gonna be the type of guy to, like take tourists snorkeling, and then like inevitably something will happen where he ends up hooking up with like a tourist like every week. It's like you want. I take you to the reefs, and they go down there, and he's spear fishing.
It's just terrible.
And then some girl's just twirling her hair, and then that's Juan Fernandez's life.
I don't know what to say. Matt, what do you think for Juan Fernandez if he's not a basketball
player? Juan Fernandez. The actor's good. I could see him as, like, an actor/model, honestly, down in Argentina, kind of just, like, killing it on, like, some, like, lower-level, like, TV show.
I'm telling you, 19-year-olds, spring break, they go down to Buenos Aires, they meet Juan Fernandez, the ship captain.
Juan Fernandez, the ship
and
captain.
He just picks him out. Yeah. That one.
I feel like Juan is the toughest one of all these to pick. Like, I don't know.
He's a smart guy.
And Khalif Wyatt nursing an ACL injury right now. He could explore acting if he wanted to.
What was that?
He could. I mean, this is maybe his time to explore acting.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. stand-up comedy.
Can you imagine Cleve Wyatt being like a head coach? Can you imagine Cleve Wyatt answering like press conference stuff?
I think at some point he said to me, I can't remember if it was on the record, off the record, if we were talking at some point. I said, could you see yourself getting into coaching? I think he had said, yeah. Like I said, he'd be a hilarious coach. Well, I think he'd be a good coach because, I mean, he really is. He's a really, really smart guy and sees the game really well. But I think he'd be amazing in press conferences, like you said. And even just like his theatrics on the sideline. Like, you probably keep officials cracking. Even in high school, he was funny. Like, he'd go up, like with his hands in the air and stuff. I don't know. A lot of different. I think we're seeing more career possibilities for Cleve Wyatt than anybody else.
But sports don't exist in this scenario, so
that's right. Yeah. We gotta take.
He'd be a life coach.
I'd worry about him showing up to practice on time too. The same thing with Allen Iverson. I don't know if
I had to suspend myself for the first half of the game. Well, Iverson came out and said, "I don't want to be a coach in the NBA because I don't want to coach any MFers that make more money than me."
Yeah, that's what he said. He said that.
Wow, who did he say that to?
I don't know.
Iverson should just get a job in college, make like $250,000 a year, work like 30
hours a
week.
He can't be an assistant coach in the NCAA. Never graduated from Georgetown.
That's right.
But is that an NCAA rule or is that an institutional rule?
Well, I mean, what? Steve Masiello was coaching at Manhattan for a long time.
True, but he got suspended until he went back and
I guess it's common knowledge that Iverson doesn't have a degree. So
he left after 2 years.
Oh, yeah.
He left after 2 years and went back.
So. Yeah.
All right. Had some fun with that one. Appreciate that question. Next question here comes from Philly Bully. Again, there's a second question. He's a prolific question asker. What is our basketball postseason outlook, and how long of a run do you predict for next? How long of a run do you predict for next season's team? Different emoji. This one with the thinking man's
thinking emoji. Face. That was what Raheem Blackshear used when he was picking
thinky
up.
Face.
What basketball postseason outlook? The CBI, CIT, one of those third tier things. They would have to make a run. I think they have to win 19, 20 games to get in the NIT.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In order to get into the NIT, you have to win out the regular season, which is possible, although... Yeah.
You have to win out the regular season. You probably still have to win, like, your opener in the conference tournament.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I think you'd have to win at least one game in the conference tournament. Mm-hmm. But, so I'd say win out and then win at least one game in the conference tournament. Maybe you're looking at the NIT, but probably CBI or CIT.
Mm-hmm. Or they could go 16-17 and not be qualified for anything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, that's very possible.
Doesn't the NIT, though, aren't they a little bit more lax on the 500 requirement?
NIT, you
now?
Have to be 500, period.
Yeah.
You cannot be a below 500 team.
I thought they were a little lax on that. No?
Unless you won your conference in the regular season somehow. I'm pretty sure you have to be an NIT 500 team. Huh. Regardless, I mean, if Temple went, 15-16 and 15-17 after the tournament, there's no way Temple's going to say, okay, let's let a sub-500 Temple team. And that's why Chaney didn't get that in the NITs until the end when Marty Collins almost fell apart.
How long of a run do
CIT you... CIT also requires a 500 team. Vegas... Oh, sorry. No, the NIT does not require that. CIT requires a 500 team. Vegas 16 and CBI and NIT do not.
This Vegas... I literally did not know about
I don't think
Vegas
they did
tournament.
It last year. I think the Vegas 16, they meant to do it and they just fell apart. What if Vegas 16 last year... consists of East Tennessee State, UC Santa Barbara, Towson, Old Dominion.
No team
with less than 18 wins.
Kid you not that I did not know that tournament existed.
Nobody in the NIT last year had less than 17 wins. Bucknell was 17-13.
Was that the first year of this? It's called Vegas 16?
Vegas 16. I feel like they canceled it. Yeah, the Vegas 16.
What if
16,
they go to that and Vegas 16, Fran Dunphy says it was very important for our guys to see Cirque du Soleil in a very popular venue?
Vegas 16 did return. They did it last year. Who won it? Vegas 16 winner was Old Dominion by 1 point against Oakland, which is not in Oakland, it's in Michigan.
A lot of information there.
Yeah,
how long of a run do you predict for next season's team?
I think that team can win a game in the tournament next year, legitimately. I think if you bring back Josh Brown, you're bringing in the freshmen, all the current contributors are a year older, minus Dan Dingell and Mark Williams. Mm-hmm. I think they can make the tournament and win a game.
Yeah, I think that would be the expectation going into next season, tournament, or, then maybe, I think... You'd have to seriously think about some changes. But
next year is the year where if they have a similar year to this year with that talent and the incoming flux, that's when it's, maybe it is time to...
Yeah. Now the questions are just questions the fans ask, and it's probably not going to happen. But next year, if they're not able to at least make the tournament next year, it's...
And provided the fact that they find some sort of defensive identity resembling anything getting stops would be important. Next question comes from I Hate Your School with the 8... old school text message there, lingo. I Hate Your School on Twitter. What is the over-under on acronyms used by the football team this season? OOU, NPH, and counting.
Well, they had two new ones this morning. MPH was what? North Philly Heroes, because they had the fire department there.
Mm-hmm.
And
OU, one of
OU is one of us. They had five AW, five alarm workout, because five alarm fire, they're working out. Mm-hmm. I'll put the over under at like 26.5.
Yeah, I think it's going to get, I mean, like, we aren't even into spring football yet. Then around the season opener against Notre Dame.
Was it five SW was one of them?
That was the five-star warrior for the workouts.
Warrior? I thought it was five-star Wednesday or something. So
maybe that was
day.
It, yeah. Somebody told me it was a weightlifting reference or something.
Yeah, maybe.
So if we're saying over-under on acronyms used by a football team this season starting now, you're putting the over-under 26?
I'll say 23.5 is my over-under.
I would take the over on that.
I think it's going to get out of control.
Yeah,
I would take the over, too.
Remember when OOU first came out, like, last year? And, like, it took me, like, a month to figure out what OOU was. Until somebody finally tweeted, like, one of us. I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Makes sense. But they kept it.
I mean, GDQ, that's just like a Temple-wide one, yeah. Right? We'll have to add, maybe in a couple weeks, we'll have swag coordinator Dave Gerson on. Adam DeMichael, I love him for the fact that Adam DeMichael last week said, like, can't believe, or I forget what the tweet was, and it was one of Dave's old YouTube videos, and he's sitting there with the helmets.
It's, oh, it's the goodness. First year after Golden, it's Golden, the offseason after Golden's first year, too. He's just like, well, the first year of the Golden era.
I predict we're going to go to a bowl game.
Yeah. He has all his little mini helmets.
Love you, Dave. It's, hey, I mean, he can probably at least look at that and not cringe. I wouldn't want
I'm telling you,
ninth grade John DeCarlo on
YouTube. That's not even ninth grade, I think that's... like middle school.
That's not ninth grade. That's more like a 9-year-old.
I said
this was 06, and he's
23.
There's a picture that exists.
Yeah, that
of
like 12 years old.
Junior high John DeCarlo in a sweater and a turtleneck that I sent to Kyle, and he.
Oh, that's my favorite photo. I'm gonna start like.
Said I look like a Midwestern mother.
I said you looked like Kim Kardashian before plastic surgery.
Oh my God.
One of these days, when we got our house, when we first got like. The house, putting up stuff. My wife put up way too many wedding photos, like way too many wedding photos. And I told her, I was like, all these photos on our wall are from the same day. So now she's like diversified a little more. I'm going to start printing out all the absurd photos of you that I have been gifted over the years.
I'd be honored.
Just in the guest room, it'll just be John DeCarlo. Here's John DeCarlo in front of the World Trade Center. Here's John DeCarlo as a kid. Here's John DeCarlo wearing Star Wars socks up to his thing. This is my collection.
With Star Wars C-3PO socks, Andy Gibb, ringer tee. Andy Gibb, youngest brother of the Bee Gees. Yeah. Anyway, what?
Why didn't people beat you up more often?
Oh, God.
I went through my childhood relatively unscathed.
And Andy Gibb?
To this day, I still listen to Andy Gibb.
I'm saying, but like, the fact that you were, what, 6 in that photo? He said, like, I just want to beat you. I just want to beat you.
Naperville, Illinois. There's a picture. I'll show you after the show. The picture of me in an Andy Gibb T-shirt, Star Wars socks, and my brother. It's quite a photo. Anyway, Pat Egan, at Pat Egan from 97.5. Hi. Thank you for taking my tweet. Can you compare this junior day to years past? Hype, turnout, etc. Also,
let's just stop
there. And there's a second part.
So Matt, how would you compare junior day?
Junior's Day.
Junior's
it's
Day.
His day.
It's Ken Griffey's. And they're just still showing he's got it.
Yeah.
Falling asleep in locker.
Beautiful. Sweet swing.
I don't know if there's anything you could compare it to in years past. I mean,
like the first time I heard the Beatles.
Ed Foley tweeted out yesterday, this was the best collection of talent we've had in his 10 years on campus.
I agree with that.
I mean, the amount of guys they had and some of the 4-star, 5-star guys. I mean, you look at Ashim Young, Iverson, Clement, some other
guys.
Kyle Pitts, Kevin Doyle, Devin Leary. The list goes on and on. But I mean, they had a lot of talent, and it was a reasonable thing too. I mean, you had South Jersey kids, you had kids from the city, in the city, you had kids from Pittsburgh, you had kids from the DMV. So you know, you got a bunch of different areas. From the general area,
it didn't disappoint, because all of a sudden, like the second they got on campus, it started being like, here's like 10 more offers.
Mm-hmm.
Like they offer a lot of kids, and they did exactly what they wanted to do.
Yeah, and I think it was really important for Jeff Collins too, because you know, I'm sure that they're coming in December and thinking like, gosh, hopefully we'll be able to do a lot more with a full recruiting cycle under our belts. So Yeah, a lot of people have been saying this, and we've been talking about this. Are they going to get a lot of these top-tier kids? No, maybe not. But, you know, at least you get your name associated with them. You get those kids on campus, and then they start talking to other people, and they start getting involved with some of their other teammates. But I think it was important from a perception perspective to get a lot of these bigger names. Like you said, get in with schools like, you know, St. John's College High School and DeMatha. And Doyle's interesting because he started out at Malvern Prep and then transferred down to St. John's. And a lot of quarterbacks in. The kid from Pittman's supposed to be pretty good. The quarterback from Vineland's supposed to be pretty good, even though he'll be a running back at the next level.
Right.
But again, they've got stiff competition for a lot of these guys because they were at Rutgers first, and then they were at Pitt first, and then they were at Temple this past Monday.
I feel like Devin Leary and Kevin Doyle are going to, everywhere they go, it's going to be that school wants both of you. They're only going to take one. Like Pitt offered both of them. Like Rutgers is interested in both of them. Like,
yeah.
One of you is going to have to make a decision at some point. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. The other one might take your spot.
And again, I think with this staff, it's still going to be the similar to what Matt Rhule used to do. Get involved with a lot of, like, you know, high-profile recruits, but still knowing that they're still going to, you know, maybe not get a lot of the four- and five-star guys, but still trust their eyes on what they see from other players around the area.
Yeah, but the thing was with Rhule, you know, he'd get in with a bunch of four- or five-star guys at this time in the recruiting cycle, and then, you know, when official visit season rolls around in December, you build a good enough relationship with enough kids where, you know, you can get some of them in for official visits. And then, as was the case with, like, Karamo, you flip him. I mean, I'm not saying they're going to get 5 4-star kids for this class, but could they get 1 or 2? Probably, yeah.
And Karamo's brother was one of the kids at Junior Day.
Yeah, he got rated at 3-star by Rivals, too.
And he's at Bartram, right? He's
not at Prep Charter. Prep Charter.
Yeah. Second part of the question. Also, a flood is coming, and Yahweh has spoken to you, with you in all caps. You can only bring one person from the scoop, includes Jamie and Greg. Who you pick?
What, heaven? Where am I bringing them?
You can only bring...
Also, that's not how you spell Yahweh.
It's supposed to be Y-A-W-E-H, and he spelled it Y-A-W-A-Y.
We'll just assume it's like an island or something. That's going to be fine from the flood.
Yeah. You can only bring one person from the scoop. Oof.
I'm assuming this is like an uncivilized island, like it hasn't been developed. It's just like, the guy I'm from Lost. I'm bringing Dalton. I bet you Dalton's going to be able to keep me afloat. He's going to be skinning deer. He'll craft some type of fishing utensil. It's going to be me and Dalton. Do not say anything. Oh, never mind. I'll see where your mind's going.
Why is that going anywhere?
Then what's your answer?
I'm bringing Matt. Your best days are behind you. He's the future of Owl Scoop.
But what does that affect an island?
I just think at some point,
like... He'll kill you for meat.
What?
Like, it'll be like Lord of the Pigs. Lord of the Flies. You'll be piggy.
No, because I think Matt is very well connected, and Fran Brown will come and rescue
Fran
us.
Brown.
Fran Brown will like, he's like, yo, man, I wish I would have made better time from Waco, but I heard you guys were in trouble, and he's going to come and save us.
I hate to do this to John, but I think I got to go with Kyle.
Oh, yeah.
Kyle's just like, he doesn't give a shit about anything. We already cursed once, so I can't curse again. Like, Kyle would just be on like attack mode.
Survive in advance, baby.
Yeah, I'd be like, do we try to eat the sand? Do we filter the water
instantly? We would be on this beautiful tropical island. You somehow survived. You would just I try to pick up that conch shell on my back. Kind of thing. That would be like a 3-week thing. Like,
I hate to do this.
I think that's it.
That's a good way to end the scoop.
Jamie and Greg just don't even get any consideration. But Greg has not been on the scoop since 1978.
Jamie's fragile. He'd break
Jamie's
his ankle
got the bum
chasing
ankle,
after
yeah.
a boar.
Yeah.
I mean, it wouldn't even be that practical. He'd break his ankle, like, I don't even know, trying to do a rope swing. It would send poorly. Jamie's not even in consideration. Greg's up there. I'd probably pick Greg before you. I think Greg's a survivor. Every now and then I hook that Roxborough fire out of him.
Yeah. He's got a little bit of Roxborough grit.
Yeah.
If Owl Scoop interns, former and current interns, were available, that would change things.
Well, that
could make things
interesting. That opens up some things. So let's just leave that at that.
All right.
And
well,
that's the end of the scoop.
Thank you for listening and for putting up with our all sorts of digressions and funny and not so funny material. We will be back with you next week to talk more basketball, talk more football, more position breakdowns as we get closer to spring football. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you soon. Thanks.